Well, the first thing I think he would do would be to stand up and tell the truth. I mean, he had a great expression that was just tell the truth and watch them scatter.
So the further away the problem is, the easier it is to postpone action on it. And that's essentially what we're doing.
Be real. Because people in New Hampshire are really cool.
I'd say get in the game. This is a problem facing your generation. You have to have a voice in the decision.
Welcome to Facing the Future, brought to you by the Concord Coalition on WKXL, New Hampshire's talk radio station. Tune in each week as we dive into topics related to fiscal policy, like healthcare, taxes, national security, the national debt, and more. You will hear discussions with experts, elected officials, and industry leaders on how the nation's fiscal and economic challenges impact current and future generations, and we'll explore some of the solutions. I'm your host and New England Regional Director for the Concord Coalition, Chase Hageman. Today I'll be taking time to speak with local accountant and Concord Coalition State Advisory Board member Adam Lord. We'll also be playing a portion of a recent healthcare event featuring a panel of three policy experts. But before we dive into today's discussion, let's kick off the program with our first segment, Facing the News, where we will take a few minutes to see what is going on in the world of fiscal policy this week. Congress is back after a two-week recess, and the House is getting to work on fiscal year 2020 spending bills. Three of the 12 appropriations bills are scheduled to be marked up in subcommittee, including the second biggest and often most contentious of the 12, the Labor HHS Education Spending Bill. The Military Construction VA and Legislative Branch bills are on tap as well. The full Appropriations Committee is scheduled to take up the bills next week. Democrats have opted to first tackle the appropriations bills that reflect their current priorities, largely rejecting the initiatives in the president's budget proposal. Currently, there's no agreement that sets spending levels for the coming fiscal year other than a 2011 deficit reduction law that would set incredibly tight caps. Thus, House Democrats are charging forward, assuming higher spending levels than would otherwise be permitted based on a, quote, deeming resolution that sets an overall discretionary spending level of $1.295 trillion for the upcoming fiscal year. That new, higher spending limit is not binding on the Republican-controlled Senate. Both parties want relief from those much tighter spending caps, but there's no movement toward a deal that would increase them at this time. In the meantime, lawmakers will get back to discussing a disaster aid package that has been stalled for months. Social Security's trustees painted a bleak picture of the program in this year's annual report, but one aspect of the system that is currently doing a little better than expected is the program's Disability Insurance Fund. The good news expanded the life of the fund by several years, but only helped extend the solvency of the overall Social Security system by 1 year, with the combined trust funds expected to be depleted by 2035. The improvement in the Disability Insurance Fund has been attributed to a decrease in disability applications and lower benefit awards because of a strong economy. Medicare's trustees had an even less positive message to share, with the system's Hospital Insurance Trust Fund expected to be depleted by 2026. At that point, the fund will only be able to cover 89% of its obligations without reform. Medicare is expected to rapidly grow in cost through 2035 as more baby boomers enroll in the program. And a smaller workforce means fewer people paying into the system. The trustees recommended cutting expenses or increasing the payroll tax. Up next, Adam Lord will be joining me to discuss some of the impacts of changes in the tax code. We'll be back after these short messages. Welcome back to Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. I'm joined on the show by Adam Lord. Adam is a CPA and manager for Pinchansky & Co., which is a full-service CPA firm in Manchester, New Hampshire, that focuses on tax, accounting, financial statement preparation, and more. Adam's niche is with the nonprofit industry. He's involved with his community, a graduate of Leadership Greater Manchester, a member of the Governor's Millennial Advisory Council, the New Hampshire Society of CPAs, and he's one of the founding members of the New Hampshire Log Cabin Republicans. He's also on the Concord Coalition's State Advisory Board, and that's one of the reasons why having him on the show today. Welcome to Facing the Future, Adam.
Thank you, Chase.
So besides the fact that you are involved with what Concord is doing in the state, I want to talk generally about why fiscal policy might matter to you, why you think it should matter to
our generation, because we're about the same age. And then really, is that what drove you to get involved with Concord?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you again for having me. It's an honor. The reason I'm so fond of the work the Concord Coalition does is because it brings together the things I'm interested in. It brings together legislative efforts with the economic cycles. It informs the public on the potency of the U.S. fiscal policy, allowing us to talk about items that are going to directly affect the economy. As the American people talk more about the changing tax code and the economic indicators, it gives insight to the federal government's plans, and the items we talk about consist of how they're raising revenues through taxation, borrowing as other means of getting money, as well as how they're spending money. These items are important to indicators of the current and future health of the economy, and in my opinion, it allows us as a group of individuals to talk about ways to avoid structural budget deficits.
I want to piggyback off of that, Adam. Why do you think structural budget deficits are either good or bad when it comes to their impact on our generation?
There needs to end up being some idea as far as how to develop some form of surplus. With the way that the current entitlement programs go alone, it goes to show that the millennial generation is going to be taking this on the chin, as you said in one of your excellent Beers and Budgets. and it really does. It really does bring a lot of light to as far as where the generational gap is starting to be divided more and more. There's very little talk from our generation, and we're the ones that are directly affected by it.
Yeah, I think you just said a lot there that we could probably spend the whole show unpacking, but I'm going to sort of gloss over that a little bit and pivot here. You're a CPA. You work as an accountant. The 2017 tax code overhaul probably had an impact on your business, certainly the industry. And before we dive into that, I think I want to lay a little bit of a foundation here. Just sort of talking about the revenue impacts, the economic impacts. For our listeners, we're talking about the 2017 tax code overhaul. It cost nearly $2 trillion, effectively sacrificing some tax revenue for short-term economic growth. No one will argue with the fact that the last year or so we've seen a nice spike, a nice shot in the arm of growth in the economy. But many economists still forecast this long-term drop in economic growth to less than 2%. And there's a whole host of reasons for that, which I don't think we'll have time to get into on the show. And I think one criticism I've heard of the overhaul is that it didn't actually streamline the tax code. The Joint Committee on Taxation actually pointed out that there, although some tax expenditures, those deductions, exclusions, credits were eliminated, more were actually added to it. So we ended up with more tax expenditures that cost around $1.5 trillion a year in terms of lost revenue. And one last thing I wanted to point out is a claim coming out of the 2017 tax code overhaul is that it actually resulted in increased tax revenue. And that statement on its own is a little misleading at best, because year over year tax revenues generally go up when the economy is growing as well. Very rarely do you see an actual drop in revenue unless a recession is occurring. So it is factually true that there was an increase in revenue after the tax code overhaul, but it was one of the smallest increases in 50 years. And that increase was less than inflation going from 2017 to 2018. So there was actually a real drop in tax revenue, and as a percentage of the economy, revenue from the tax code overhaul went down as well. So certainly from a taxpayer and voter perspective, there were some perks. You know, many people saw tax cuts. We brought down our corporate tax, our top line tax rate to a more internationally competitive level. But it certainly had some ramifications on the economy and on the federal budget. So that was a really long-winded introduction, sort of laying the foundation for our conversation today, Adam. So let's go broad here. You're a CPA. What kind of clients do you have? What kind of impact have you seen with those clients coming out of that 2017 tax code change?
Yeah, so you know, the good thing about New Hampshire is we see so many different organizations. New Hampshire's bread and butter is not just privately held businesses, but it's also family businesses. And you look at the level of people that are self-employed. What we're looking at here is not so much a easier tax code, but it does away with some of the information in there that really went beyond what the government was going to be going after. And what I mean by that is it does away with that redistribution of income. It's not supposed to streamline and make the tax code easier, but it is going to take out some items that did create that disparity between the states. And I think that's where the conversation for the new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act really starts, is yes, we have this new tax bill that goes through, but now I think we're going to start seeing the states come more in line. As far as what we end up seeing from that tax code, and let me start off by saying the type of clients that we work with is not just the small privately held businesses, but we also do individuals, high net worth individuals. We also go up to do financial statements, audits, compilations, reviews. We see everything as it pertains to privately held enterprises. There's a lot of changes that came through, not just from the tax code. There are accounting changes that came through, accounting standard codifications that pertain to leases and how you recognize revenue. There's changes that came to the tax code that pertain to nonprofits, which is huge in New Hampshire. So there's a big opportunity for New Hampshire businesses and the New Hampshire economy to capitalize on this, but the state needs to conform to that 2018 federal tax code.
This is Facing the Future. I'm talking to Adam Lord. We're discussing some of the impacts of changes in the tax code since the 2017 overhaul. And I want to pick up on something you just said there, Adam. You talked about an opportunity for the state to conform to the code. Can you break that down a little bit for our listeners? What do you mean by that, and how does it play out?
So the state will not conform to the federal tax code. What happens is there's static conformity where some of the states out there will automatically conform to the federal tax code. New Hampshire does not automatically adopt the 2018 tax code.
When you say adopt the 2018 tax code, what does that mean? I mean, I assume that the federal tax code applies to everyone because it's the federal tax code.
The legislature has to adopt the code. Simple way to put it is you look at the federal tax code for 2018 says you can deduct 50% of meals. You cannot deduct entertainment. According to the 2016 tax code of New Hampshire, you can get 50% of meals, and you can also get 50% of entertainment. So you have the difference between those two in that small instance. The reason that the state will not adopt it is because they don't know what the revenue implications are. They want to wait and see is the game that they end up playing. But there's a lot of missed opportunity.
Let's talk about the implications of the federal tax code overhaul. How has it impacted your clients generally? Obviously, you can't talk about your specific clients.
So the big difference that we're looking at here is we still have the standard increase in income that's taxed, but the rate that it's taxed at is what has changed. And how we come up with the income that is taxed, that's changed also. So you have a couple of moving parts here. Mostly everybody knows that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did decrease the tax rate. The items that come into play for taxable income and taxable deductions changed. And those who did not do the proper tax planning were left stunned by some of the items that were disallowed. In New Hampshire, we end up having higher real estate taxes. If you work in Massachusetts, you also pay state income taxes to the Commonwealth of Mass, for instance. The combination of the state and local income taxes is now limited at $10,000, whereas in prior years, that would have not been limited. So we end up having decreases in thresholds that many taxpayers didn't end up taking into consideration. You also have the increase in the standard deduction, which is the allowance that the government gives you for the basic living expenses, which we would compare with, for instance, your itemized deductions, the items that you take into consideration for mortgage interest, the real estate taxes, your charitable gifts. All these items come into play in determining your taxable income. Without properly estimating what your tax is going to be and shortcoming up on that tax liability means that you're going to have to pay interest and penalties, and it costs you more money. So there was a lot of people that were surprised. The tax refunds did change for the most part, but I think they had said that there was no more than maybe of a 2% fluctuation in hindsight as far as what that total adjustment could have been. The reason that a lot of people were talking about the changes in that was because of their absence of their change in the withholding. Yeah. Exactly.
I know there were some significant changes in the corporate side of the tax code as well, and I'm assuming those changes impact your clients in some capacity. Do you think there were any unintended consequences or maybe loopholes coming out of the changes at the federal level that your clients or others could actually take advantage of?
There were a lot of instances that here in New Hampshire we did notice that they weren't so much loopholes, but being able to watch the legal entities kind of conform to be more of a beneficial tax strategy. For instance, in New Hampshire, there's a large market of self-employment and companies that are LLCs and S-Corps, meaning the income and expenses of the company are flowed through to the individual, and they report on it on their individual income tax return and are taxed at the individual income tax rate. The industry they're in and the legal structure they choose when they establish the company directly affects the new portions of the tax code, specifically the Section 199A deduction. So we saw a lot of changes from partnership and LLCs to S-Corps and so on. And it's because of the way that they were legally set up. In essence, there was more of an advantage for organizations to take wages in some instances. And there were some industries that pertained to real estate, which worked out very favorably with that Section 199A. But I think that this is something that is going to kind of continue on, such as the Section 179, because of those benefits to states that specifically have as large of pass-through entities as New Hampshire does. This is also what they're talking about by equalizing the tax code. This directly affects the purpose of this deduction is intended to provide tax relief to businesses not benefiting from the reduction in the top corporate tax rate from the 35% to the 21%.
Okay, so I know we just dove into some very specific sections of the code and very specific examples of how corporations or organizations and businesses can adjust to the tax code based on what you were saying with the pass-through entities. And then you also mentioned the withholding issue, how although there is technically a bit of a tax cut for the average person, there might have been an issue with withholding. And at the end of the tax year, they were saying, oh my goodness, I actually owe more taxes, which wasn't factually true, but functionally that's how it played out for them in terms of having to owe something at the end of the year. And then at the very beginning of this, I just sort of laid out the economic impacts of this overhaul. And you know, you can certainly make the argument that there are benefits to the changes in the tax code, but from a fiscal policy perspective, I certainly see some very strong negatives, at least with how that particular tax code overhaul played out and how it's impacting revenue. And so my last question for you, Adam, kind of going full circle to the beginning of our conversation, as a millennial, as someone who's looking at the future of our nation and growing debt and deficit and seeing the student loan issue and seeing a higher cost of living and seeing the need to put Medicare and Social Security on a more sustainable track, when you're looking at the tax code overhaul specifically, are you pleased or displeased with the results of it? Would you have liked to see something a little bit different that maybe didn't have some of the negative impacts that it's currently having? Or if you're looking at it from the business perspective, you're just like, yeah, that's fine.
No, see, there's a couple of things that we're going through here. The first thing that we're talking about is the changes in the tax code. And the changes in the tax code, again, I feel is it brings into line with what the government's responsibility is as far as taxing its American citizens. It's not supposed to be designed as a redistribution of income. You make what you make and you're taxed on it. And the government ends up having different amounts to kind of equalize it. The items that where millennials need to end up seeing is a movement on the items that are directly going to affect the economy as we start going further and further into our generational responsibilities. And you start seeing the baby boomers start phasing away from their responsibilities and they start taking on some of these entitlements. I think that there needs to be a general revisit to the tax cap. I'm not saying we should do away with it, but I think that they need to revisit the amounts and the prioritization of what needs to actually be spent on and what the responsibility of the federal government is. But I don't think that they need to go beyond that. I think that each state has their own respective rights to be able to look at what Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid and what those effects are directly on the economy. We look at New Hampshire and we end up seeing that there is a disparity between what the reimbursement rates are and how we're going to train some of these individuals that are directly affected by those rates. We look at the services that are being provided. And for a second, we should call a spade and say, listen, it is better for businesses in New Hampshire to take on some of these responsibilities. And there's more of a cost benefit versus us having to have the state provide these. So you start seeing where the opportunity lies within some of these changes. And I think that there needs to be more of a voice from the millennials because the ball is already continuing to roll and we're not going to be able to change it, but we can at least give our input and start being able to interject where these items are going to directly affect us.
I think you pointed out an important issue there, and that is sort of the generational grappling on a lot of these issues between baby boomers and millennials and how the system should look moving forward. Certainly something that we could probably have a whole other show on and a conversation that needs to continue at the national level. This is Facing the Future. I'm your host, Chase Hageman. You've been listening to me and Adam Lord. We've been discussing some of the impacts and changes in the 2017 tax code overhaul. Thank you for joining the show, Adam.
Thank you, Chase.
Up next, you'll hear from a recent healthcare policy event at the Warren B. Rudman Center in Concord, New Hampshire. That event was called Healthcare Costs, Key Federal and State Strategies, and it featured U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan as a keynote speaker, followed by a panel of three policy experts, Joe Antos, Trish Riley, and John McDonough. When we come back from these short messages, you'll hear portions of the Q&A segment with that panel, moderated by UNH Law Professor Lucy Hodder and Concord Coalition's own Bob Bixby.
On April 5th, 2019, the UNH School of Law's Warren B. Rudman Center in Health Law and Policy Programs, as well as the Concord Coalition, hosted Healthcare Costs, Key Federal and State Strategies. This is a recording of that event. Concord Coalition Director Robert Bixby introduced the key themes before the panel presentation was held, moderated by Professor Lucy Hodder. The panelists were Joseph Antos, William H. Taylor, Resident Scholar of Healthcare and Retirement Policy at the American Enterprise Institute, Trish Riley, Executive Director of the National Academy for State Health Policy, and John McDonough, Director of the Executive and Continuing Professional Education Program at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health.
Thank you. Thank you.